You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey guys, it's Blake, and before the show starts, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. I was experimenting with a different microphone on this episode, and it did not perform as I would like it to. So, you can still hear me just fine. The quality's just not quite as good. So, I will be ditching that and going back to my other mic, which seemed to perform just fine. Okay, on with the show. Welcome to the ToneMob.com podcast, the show where we talk about guitar tone and the people behind it. With me today, I have Stephen Pettyjohn of Pettyjohn Electronics. He's an audio engineer, a circuit bender, and based on our earlier chat, a reformed hermit. So, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good, doing good.
Oh, man, you probably are doing pretty good. I just seen that you... We're on the cover of the old Tone Report. That's got to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, man. That was fun to see that come out. It was actually, it just came out this afternoon. So looks like they did, got the cover action and an interview we did with them and a pedal review on the new Petty Drive.
That's killer.
Yeah.
Man, the Petty Drive looks really sick. I have not got to mess with that, but that looks highly intriguing.
It's a deep black hole of knobs and switches. Oh, who might never return.
Who doesn't like that, man? That's fantastic.
That's right. Yes.
So I guess we can get started with kind of a basic thing. Like, what's kind of like your musical backstory, if you want to say? Do you like always play in bands? I know you mentioned that you did some. You had a studio of your own. You could kind of start wherever sure. You want.
Let's see here. Picked up a guitar somewhere in middle school and then played all through high school and then kind of got into recording at the end of high school and ended up going to electrical engineering at University of Alaska Fairbanks. So doing college up in Alaska there, studying electrical engineering to kind of learn. I was actually literally went in wanting to learn about design pedals and amps and stuff like that. Of course, they don't tell you how to do any of that, but it was much too much fun if they would have done that. It had to be much harder and more taxing for your money. But still had fun. It was kind of one of those things where I was kind of always in the back of my mind thinking how whatever lesson we were learning or whatever circuit thing we were learning about would kind of apply to studio gear or guitar gear. Kind of kept me going for a few years there. During college, I started a recording studio of my own and actually kind of worked my way through college with a small recording studio in a basement and recording local bands and producing artists and such and kind of was just always doing something musical to try to get by, living cheap, doing schoolwork and making music as much
Very
as I
nice.
Could. And so it was kind of, you know, I don't know. I sometimes look back on that now and go, man, I don't know how I did that.
That seems to be the case with a lot of guys in this industry.
It's a tough road with no roadmap. So you kind of just, I think, end up plowing through, and one day you wake up and you're
right.
somewhere different.
Of course.
put your hand down, and just plow, man. That's just kind of, yeah. Actually, I was in a band, started a band my junior year in college, and we ended up winning a National Battle of the Bands through the Christian Music Festival Association and won a developmental deal with Word Records and Warner Brothers down in Nashville.
Wow.
So we actually moved from Alaska to Nashville after my junior year to try to kind of pursue the big old, you know, label deal thing. And so that kind of happened fast and out of left field. And we ended up spending a couple years in Nashville. Really what was cool about that was that just seeing the music industry from that side of things, you know, being on the ground, meeting people, hanging out down in Music Row and talking with A&R guys, working with producers and writers, and just kind of seeing how the whole thing worked. We did a lot of touring and just kind of did that full time for a couple of years. It ended up kind of not being what I really wanted to spend my life doing. Didn't really want to be out on the road forever. And kind of, you know, I tell people I kind of got that out of my system. Right. and kind of realized, hey, I kind of really enjoy the studio side of this. And one day I'd like to have a family. So that might be a little bit easier to stay home with the fam if I'm running the studio. Running the studio gig. So I actually at that point also realized I didn't particularly like living in Tennessee. And being from Alaska, it was just maybe a little bit too hot and flat. So I ended up out here in Oregon.
Good call.
Yeah, it was a good call. I moved out here 5 years ago now and moved to Albany area, actually, which is kind of a funny place to move to. But I have friends there, and they had a basement I could live in. So I packed everything I owned in the back of my Ford Ranger and drove across the country in the middle of winter and moved into my friend's basement.
There you go.
That's how you end up in Oregon, right?
Well, I don't know how people end up here. I've always been here, so I'm a little bit of, and I've been kind of in various places around the country, and I am like, yep, that's where I need to stay.
It's a good place. Yeah, no, so it's kind of scratches the northwestern, you know, Alaskan itch enough to keep me happy on that front, and then obviously much better connected to the rest of the world than Alaska is. Even though I do miss it at times, it was a really cool place to grow up.
Oh, but, yeah, I got to get up there at some point. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, pretty inspirational. But so I actually, didn't start teetering much with pedals other than just buying them and using them until the last, you know, couple years, 2-3 years. I was mainly focused on working my studio. So recording bands, artists again, once I moved out here, really tried to work more as much as I could on recording stuff and end up really getting into post-production and got an analog console and got into mixing and eventually into mastering. And now I'd say probably about 50% of what I do is mastering. Okay. So I mostly work post these days, which I really enjoy, and it fits my kind of engineering personality real good. I'm kind of an artistic engineer, which is a rare breed. Maybe not so much of a, I can produce, but I feel more comfortable in the engineering seat. But definitely, musicality and art is still plays a big role in how I work. So being able to work in post is a good fit for me. I could see myself working that, you know, for a long time.
And that's something that's so foreign to me. I've, you know, done a decent amount, not a ton, but a decent amount of recording, and I've been really fortunate to be in some
cool,
really nice studios recording, like my last band's nice album, or my current band's last album. Last and first.
There you go.
You know, a guitar player in my band, he's got a really good ear for mixing, and so he mixed it in his small home studio. And as soon as we started talking mastering, I'm like, I don't know. That's a whole foreign thing to me. I don't understand. I know what the concept is, but I do not get how the actual hands-on confuses me. So
I picked up on it. I was like that for years too. You know, kind of have to dabble in it from time to time for a client on a budget, but never really happy with the results I could get, and ended up always trying to send it out, you know, if there was budget for it, just, you know, but I ended up sitting in on a handful of sessions throughout the years, both in Nashville and out here in Portland, and was able to pick up on, you know, it's mastering is just kind of this weird thing where everyone kind of has their own approach to it and their own set of gear and signal chain, and they end up kind of having their own tricks that they like and their own tool bag, so to speak. But so it's not a real hard science, but you know, I've picked up on some of those kind of really different approaches from mixing and started experimenting with them. And after about 4 years now, I've really kind of come into some of my own, kind of created my whole own process for it that is very unique to me and it tends to give results that I really like. So my clients seem happy. So that's
that's what's important, right? What's the name of your studio? And well, and if you got a website, I'll plug that in the old show notes so everybody can check it out. Yeah,
sure. Ethereal Mastering. So Ethereal Mastering.
Okay,
.com.
Perfect. I'll put a link in that. So actually, yep. That sounds really familiar. Sweet. I wonder if I Googled that at some point somehow. That sounds familiar.
Nice.
Because I did Google local mastering places when we were shopping around. So I'm curious if I stumbled across that at some point, but
probably did. That was kind of, you know, just most of it comes in over the internet, so it's kind of a fun. I'm always listening to new music that way, which keeps life interesting.
Very cool. So kind of moving back to more of the guitar side of things.
Sure.
So the pre-drive, that, as I understand, is your first product that you came out with. But I'm assuming just based on the level of what's going on with that thing, that's probably not your first pedal that you built.
Well, that's the funny thing about it is it actually is my maiden voyage.
Wow. Well done.
Yeah. Thank you. It was, you know, people sometimes ask me about the R&D process, you know, coming up with these circuits, and it's very laborious, and there's much weeping and gnashing of teeth and gray hairs. You know, it's just, it's easily the most challenging thing I've ever done. Both pedals I've come out with now that I have two, both were equally hard for different reasons. And both took about the same amount of time. The first one, the pre-drive, so I hadn't really dabbled much in circuits for about 5 or 6 years since I was mainly doing music, you know, playing guitar and all that, doing studio work. And but in my researching studio gear, I had come across all sorts of on all the forums and such, all these engineers and technical folk talking about all the different circuits used in, say, microphone preamps or recording consoles or EQs. And ultimately, you know, you get into that high-end audiophile stuff, they dive into the circuitry and they start talking about, you know, this is why this sounds better, or this particular type of circuit I think sounds better in this situation, and this is why. And ultimately, on those crazy forums, you end up having some really smart dude show up who starts dropping equations and talking about mystical black, you know, boxes or capacitors or chips or, you know, whatever their favorite
flavor
is. And of course, and it's kind of equally entertaining as it is educating. And and so I kind of, through researching gear, basically started, you know, I was always applying my electrical engineering background to try to kind of decipher what they're saying. And ultimately would end up hearing about some new something that I hadn't heard of before and go on a rabbit trail and learn all I could about that, you know. And one of those particular parts was these discrete op amps, and that we use in the pre-drive and in the Petty Drive Deluxe. And basically, a discrete op amp originally it was the precursor to what we, you know, the monolithic op amp, the little black boxes that you have in most pedals, other than that are chips, you know, little dip 8 chips or whatnot. And before you had those, which basically the amplifier circuit is built into a laser cut out of a piece of silicone, single piece of silicone, you had to, people figured out it'd be very nice for design's sake to create an amplifier block that could be, you know, reused, that you could just kind of mass produce them. But all they had was these discrete transistors at the time. And so they actually created the same, you know, essentially the same thing as those smaller chips, but using discrete, you know, individual transistors and resistors and through-hole components, capacitors and such. And that was actually what you had beforehand. And one of the first applications of, and one of the only really practical applications was in high-end recording equipment. And, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of high-end stuff. API was really one of the big companies that they had, came out with their 2520 chip, I think is what it's called. Anyway, they have, you know, just about every stage in their consoles is driven by one of their discrete op amps. And same, you have some of the Neve gear, older Neve gear had discrete op amps in them, and as did the John Hardy 990 chip bass gear. And so there's a whole slew of kind of gear that is still to this day coveted and kind of mythical in its tonal qualities.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and amongst studio engineers. So I kind of just had this thought of, well, I know these chips are really expensive, but I wonder what they would sound like in a guitar pedal. You know, would you get this? They're kind of known for being clear and punchy and fast and just kind of more musical and more open than a standard op amp. And so I wondered if, you know, and that's in the case of a microphone pre or EQ, right? You know, so I thought, you know, I wonder if I could get one of these to work in a guitar pedal, and would it have this a similar effect compared to, you know, your standard guitar pedal using a, you know, anywhere from a 45 cent, you know, 45, 58, you know, or, you know, $4 Burrs Browns is a high end, you know, audiophile chip, so to say. But these discrete op amps are, you know, $50 to $100 a chip.
Wow.
I knew they were expensive.
I didn't know that it was getting into that territory for a small piece of, you know, small piece of the puzzle, relatively. So.
Yeah. So there's a whole slew of them. You know, I don't know. There's at least 30 to 40 different discrete op amps out there in the market. There's probably more. I don't know. There might be over 50. But, you know, they're not all necessarily interchangeable. And it's a real interesting class of electronics. It's, I've actually built a few kits too, and building them in the original through-hole way, you know, it's quite a chore. You know, so anyway, lots of design, you know, I dusted off my, you know, this was the idea that basically sparked Page on Electronics was, was this idea of, you know, could I use these discrete op amps in a guitar pedal and would they sound good? And it was literally that much. And I got approached by a business guy and also a guitarist on the worship team at our church there in Albany named Chris Hoff. And he was looking to start a business in music manufacturing and heard I had an idea. I was talking to some friends basically met up with me and heard out my idea and said, I like the idea. We should try it. And so basically he's like, you know, what do you need? And helped me get all the parts I would need for an R&D table and kind of geared up and said, all right, see if he can come up with something in 6 months, you know, and
wow.
Was kind of from there, it was just kind of locked myself in a cave. Yeah. It was kind of like, I hadn't even produced a working prototype of anything. Didn't even know if it would work. And so it was kind of like, well, let's, dust off my textbooks and get out the old internet and let's see if we can't turn one of these puppies on and make her purr. And that's kind of that's how the pre-drive started. So it, the first step in that was just trying to create a buffer. You know, the simplest building block of any circuit would be a buffer, input buffer, really. And it was also logically one of the first areas you would hear an improvement in the overall quality. And I kind of had also deduced that from a couple of reasons. For one, in the recording studio, the type of preamp you plug into radically can change how your microphone sounds. For instance, I can take a $100 SM57 that sounds just kind of okay through a cheap preamp and plug it into a Neve preamp and it makes an electric guitar amp or a snare drum sound awesome.
Right.
You know, but it doesn't necessarily sound all that awesome through a cheap preamp. You know, this preamp interacts with this microphone and really brings it to life, you know? So I had that kind of studio mentality that, you know, the first circuit in your chain is the most important. Whatever you lose in that first circuit, you can never really get back. So I thought, you know, this would be a good place for a real high-end audiophile circuit. And beyond that, I started noticing on my pedal board, if I, whatever pedal I put first in the chain actually started changing how my guitar sounded. And I started realizing, you know, whatever first buffer I was plugging into was loading my pickups differently. It would either give me a brighter or a warmer or a more muffled tone. And I thought, you know, if there's ever a place to put something this high end, it would be right in that first always on spot. And so basically I took me a few months to build a buffer that even worked on pedal power, because these things take real high voltage and I had to figure out how to get it to work on, you know, it pre-drives on 18 volts. But anyway, finally got one to work and started comparing it to, you know, say your classic buffers that I built, you know, the buffer that's in the Klon that some people like, you know, or the buffer that's in a Tube Screamer, or, you know, all these kind of your kind of classic pedal buffers as kind of something to compare to. And, I just noticed an increase in clarity and in depth and just sounded, you know, musical without being harsh, you know, clarity without being harsh. And I thought, this is exactly, you know, more string harmonics and more pick detail. And I thought, this is exactly what I was hoping to get out of this, something of this effect, compared to kind of the other buffers on the market. And I thought, well, let's create a pedal that would have everything I could ever want in the first pedal in my chain.
There you go.
You know, and so that's where all the features on the pre-drive started. I said, okay, I've got a great buffer. Now, how can I make a bunch of really useful things so that I, you know, if I'm going to make this expensive of a buffer, what are all the things I would ever want in a first pedal, always on type of application, mm-hmm. and both live and in the studio. And so the pre-drive was kind of my first attempt at taking this application of these discrete op amps and trying to create kind of a premium every feature I could want on this first on in my chain application, and kind of to the nth degree, to so to speak, and kind of be a real powerful studio tool for the session musician or the engineer, yet be robust enough to take on the road. And you know, so that's kind of where a lot of the features in the pre-drive were born out of that thought process. And you know, the rest is, I'll let you kind of ask from there.
Well, dissecting it the way you just broke it down, that's like, oh, okay, well, that's why he did that. Like, I get it. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to me, it's always seemed, without actually talking to you first, it's always seemed to me that it was derived from a studio perspective with the features that were built into it. And so it's really interesting to find out that that was actually the case. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so for instance, the circuit is actually designed and built in true audiophile form. I ear tested a bunch of different high end capacitors for the coupling caps, and ended up with the real high end line from WiMA, the MKP8-10s, that I just were the closest thing. I actually built a direct coupled version of the circuit and compared it to the one with the caps in it and tried to find the one that was the closest thing to not having any capacitors in the chain.
Oh, okay. And then I was about to go. Use, so now hold on. You're about to exceed my electronics knowledge, 'cause I don't know what that means. Yeah. But I do so now. I got you.
Yeah. So there's, the capacitors in the chain can affect the tone, you know? So I actually built one without any in the chain, which wasn't, it's not something we can mass produce, but just for the sake of comparing to, I went ahead and went through that whole process, you know, in my studio and through guitar amps, of auditioning different series of capacitors and, you know, using audiophile resistors, and, you know, just kind of took it to the nth degree. My thought process there was, if I'm going to use, two $50 chips in this pedal, I'm going to give it the best quality possible around it of circuit support to really let these chips shine, you know. And so I really tried to make it the circuit as simple yet as and as transparent as possible, so that you really heard what those, you know, could try to hear what those chips were doing and set them up for success.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to you know, spend the money on the chips and then have everything else be kind of lower grade. It kind of defeats it makes me wonder if somebody was to do that, if you'd even be able to tell what it was doing, you know.
Not nearly as much, you know, and a lot of the stuff we're talking, you know, it's kind of a hard pedal to talk about. I'll be real honest. It's more something that you plug in and go, oh, you know, now I can get it.
Yes.
You know, because the descriptive words are kind of funny, and maybe even seem hypey or markety at times, but we're just trying to talk about it.
Well, I mean, trying to describe sound is always a difficult thing. Like,
yes.
And sometimes just end up sounding like a moron when you do it. But it just is, because it's, it's using words. You know, I don't even know how to describe what I'm talking about.
Language. Exactly. The English language fails to fully describe what our ears can hear and what we can feel in sound and tone. So, you know, we do our best. And
right. So that's the story of the pre-drive, and the Petty drive is a pretty recently, I mean, when did that come out? Just in the last month or so, or 2 months or something like that?
Yeah, we officially released the Petty drive June 30th. So it's just month and a half it's been out now. And it's already, we've already sold about half as many Petty drives as we did the pre-drive for the whole entire year, you know, before that came out. So it's been a great start for us. We're actually kind of had to hire a bunch of people, and it's been July was crazy. Actually, I'm glad that it's August.
Hey, that's good problems to have, man.
Good Yo. Problems to have, man. Yep, totally.
That's killer. Totally. So can we, was the process, I mean, kind of similar for that pedal as well, or how did you approach that one? Because that seems to be, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's got a lot going on, like you say, but it seems to be, okay, I want to make a epic sounding drive pedal with every feature that I could possibly think of. Is that, am I in the right direction with that, or how did you approach that one?
So the approach on the Petty drive, was actually something I was thinking about even while I was designing the pre-drive. And I felt like the reason we went with the pre-drive first was for a few reasons. For one, I felt like it was a better introduction, better product to introduce the world to the discrete op amp, which comes with a lot of education. As far as I know, there's no other pedals using discrete op amps still to this point. So we had a big, you know, battle of education, and no one, you know, half guitarists don't even know what a discrete op amp is. And, you know, so what we find, you know, that pedal's popular with recording engineers and session players and such. But with the Petty drive, I knew that I knew I wanted to come out with an overdrive pedal. I just knew it had to be awesome. Like,
well, it couldn't, you don't want to, follow up the, something like the free drive with, a tube screamer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It, and it's the Petty, the pre drive in some ways was easier to stand out. You know, it's a cool looking box. It looks good on, you know, social media and such. It's kind of different. It's, you know, if you go to a preamp section on a website, there's not that many options, you know. So, but with an overdrive pedal, the market's, you know, there's 1,029 overdrive pedals on any given website. So, maybe, 2,029. I don't know. There's so many. And I dare say, you know, there's a bit of oversaturation in that field. So, if nothing else, at least option fatigue, and lots of great pedals out there. So many more than 10, even 5 years ago. So many great boutique designs, and so I, in kind of contemplating the design on this drive pedal, again, I was like, how do we stand out? How do we stand out? How do we bring something fresh? And ultimately for me is how do I design an overdrive pedal that I actually like, was actually a big question for me. 'Cause I'm the type of player, overdrive's like real cornerstone to me. I'm not a real high gain player usually. Session work, and whether it's playing at church or playing at a bar or any sort of gig like that, you know, overdrive is kind of my core, you know, drive. And I've used amp drive for years, and I always felt that pedals kind of lacked in a few areas. And I kind of used an overdrive pedal when I had to turn my amp down, or, you know, it was almost like a compromise to use an overdrive pedal.
Yeah. I hear that. And I'm like you say, I think until the last few years, I mean, it's the quality of drives lately is just out of control, but I mean there's the legendary ones that sound pretty good, obvious, or sound really good, but then, you know, I just feel like the 90s were a big letdown as far as overdrive pedals go. there wasn't anything. I shouldn't say anything. There's not a whole lot that I was aware of that would really blow up my skirt today, but then again, I'm kind of living in a spoiled age for a pedal addict like myself, so
Completely. And so some of my criteria are like, I've got to kick every overdrive on my board off and be happy to gig with this, you know, my drive, you know, so it was kind of, there's a bit of personal, competition within myself, you know, can I create a drive that makes me not crave something slightly different, or you know, like, you know, the classic I'm always tweaking, you know, I'm always reaching down because it's not quite right, you know, and sounds good, but it's just not quite right, you know, that whole syndrome.
Oh no, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I feel like most overdrive pedals, even the good sounding ones, still have somewhat of that type of final result where, like, yeah, this sounds good, but you change a guitar or you change a song or you change an amp and, man, it's just all out of whack, man, and it just doesn't feel quite right. And and then you get, that's before you ever get into stacking, which as being an engineer, I love stacking. I don't know if that's my engineering brain. I know lots of guys out there like it, but I just think it's fun.
It's the only way to roll.
Yeah, and it's just, it brings so much character, and yet at the same time, it's a huge unknown equation that is kind of sent all these guitarists, you know, into the endless abyss of trying to figure out which pedals are going to play nice together and sound good with your guitar and with your amp and style. And it's fun, but also kind of endless, which is maybe part of what makes it fun. But all that to say is I'm in this situation often where, you know, I break a string, say I'm playing on my telly, and I break a string at a gig and got to pull up my Les Paul, and man, my drives do not sound right.
Yeah. All of a sudden it's like, hey, you know, where'd all this mud come from?
Yeah. And so, or just don't respond as well. You know, I can really love my tone with my telly, but my Paul just doesn't quite ever, even with all the tweaking I can do, can't ever get it to live. Or vice versa, you know, find a pedal I love with my Paul, but not with my Tele or my Strat. And so that's one area I really wanted to, throughout the entire R&D process on the Petty Drive, I was constantly switching guitars. Actually, I bought a Strat that had a Gibson Burst Bucker in the bridge and a single coil in the middle, and then a coil tapping Shaler 50 in the neck, so I could basically get about six different guitars of combination, you know, out of just that one guitar.
Yeah, makes it a little more efficient.
Yeah, a little more efficient. You know, how does it sound with a Gibson? Let me go find out. How does it sound with a Strat?
Yep, there you go.
So, just flick a switch. So, but you know, really wanted to be able to create some circuits that responded equally well ultimately to humbuckers and single coils, and could kind of get you back to the experience you had with either quickly if you had to change. So that's a big design criteria for me on this pedal. Another design criteria was other than, like, you know, your classics, I really wanted something that was quiet. I was tired of, like, really noisy overdrives, especially once I start stacking them. Wanted something that was real quiet. And another thing that I just struggle with a lot of, even the a lot of great overdrive pedals, is they can either be like kind of too muddy and just kind of undefined, or kind of harsh. I like to call it the angry bumblebee syndrome, where it just sounds like you put a bunch of bumblebees in a jar and shook them up till they're angry, and you just get this buzz sound that you can't get rid of. You can't, in the studio, you can't really EQ it out. You know, I'm always dumping Highland like crazy. While I'm mixing live sound, I'm always trying to get rid of that buzz, you know, and then get rid of the mud. And so I really wanted to kind of, in the end, create a overdrive pedal that would kind of give you the ability to get mixed type tone of structures and gain structures right out of your amp. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, the tone that comes out of your amp and the tone that your mic hears are two completely different things. And then the tone that ends up on a record or you know, coming through live speakers also is another thing. You know, once the engineer has EQ and compression and all the studio tricks, you know, to kind of make it sit in the mix right, it ends up sounding a whole bunch different than it originally sounded. So I kind of, you know, took all this kind of post knowledge I have and even some engineering experience I have and tried to create circuits that were voiced kind of as those in those sweet spots of where I normally finish with a mix or finish with a master. So that the engineer wouldn't be dumping these areas that normally build up in a lot of classic overdrive designs. And so that's kind of, I think, a unique approach in that I really tried to create final product voiced circuits, that's kind of, and then I think maybe the last thing I wanted, you know, I'll mention on the design thought process is actually in gain stacking and in working in the studio a lot, I find that I actually need a lot less gain than you might think you do, especially if you're just jamming in the bedroom or, you know, even in a bar. Well, by the time you put a mic on it, you actually end up turning down the gain, usually 30%, you know, at least, and just cleaning up that signal. And so I wanted to, I found with a lot of the pedals I was using is, you know, I back off the gain and kind of have this tiny little sweet spot where it's kind of edge of breakup. And I would try to put pedals there and it would be like this tiny little spot that if I just barely touched it, it would be out. And then all this extra gain that I'd never use. So I try to kind of create a low and a medium gain side that really had a smooth transition through, you know, and really kind of blew up that sweet spot, so to speak. And so there's not as huge of a range of gain. It's real, and they're really designed to stack to kind of get your standard medium to higher gain overdrive. You don't really get it out of either circuit by themselves, but it's a kind of a blown up sweet spot, so to speak.
Like a really wide sweet spot, basically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So some of my favorite settings are actually with, say, on the chime channel, which is the right hand side, which is a low gain drive. You might have to turn it all the way up. You know, you might actually dime the thing and just leave it there. You know, and so it seems like there's, you know, when you're looking at the Petty drive, the red one here, the new one, it looks like there's a lot going on. And in the reality, there's actually a lot of it set and forget. So first of all, there's nothing under the hood. A lot of boutique pedals, they'll have trim pots and switches you have to open up the pedal to get to. And I just find that stupid. I mean, I'll be really honest. Like, I'm like, really? I've got to unscrew my pedal and take it off my Velcro board to make a change and then plug it back in. And I don't know if I'll like the change or ever get back to where it was before.
Well, it makes, you know, me feel like, some of them, maybe the designer didn't actually want you to mess with that for whatever reason. But then I'm kind of thinking, why is it a trim pot? Yeah, why is it? Why don't you just make it a fixed resistor then and call it a day? But
right, and so ultimately, there's, you know, two independent drive circuits in there, and you just have three basic, you know, three knob overdrive controls, gain, output, and a tone knob for each side. It's pretty straightforward, actually. The iron side, the left side, has a clean mix knob as well, which is cool. We can talk about that later. But then you have the series of mini toggles, and it's just each side has a three-way clipping switch, and each side has a three-way low cut switch, which is kind of a studio approach to it. But basically, as I was designing it, you know, as you've probably experienced, as you change clipping, lots of pedals these days have different, you know, clipping sections that you can change. But your low end, both your high end and your low end always seems to change with that. And so basically that three-way low cut is there to be able to compensate for the three-way clipping.
Okay, I gotcha.
So yes. Does that make sense? And so you could literally cycle through any three of those clipping and then quickly cycle through your low cut switches to get to a consistent low end profile that works with each clipping. So you never, you know, you might want to have the hardest clipping, but you could still have great low end, Or if you go to, you know, a little more open setting, but it would get too muddy because more low end's coming through, you just use a little low cut switch to tighten it up. And so it's there. Those are there really kind of be set and forget and to interact with the clipper. And then you use the tone knob to adjust the high end, you know, whether it's the harshness or the kind of sizzle on top of the clipper. And so it's really a pretty straightforward thought process that allows you to get real usable tones out of every single clipping option, no matter what rig you're on.
Very cool. Very cool. So yeah, we're going down your products here. You got those too, obviously. Something I've been asking some of the builders, if you're willing to talk about it, is there anything in the pipeline that you're particularly excited about, or are you going to kind of focus on these guys for a while?
It's hard to say when and where and what, but there's definitely more products on the in the pipeline. I'm been kind of backlogged with orders on the Petty Drive since we released it, but hopefully here in the next couple of weeks I will be digging back into my R&D mode and start working on the next round. I will say there's plans for a few more dual pedals and potentially plans for single pedals as well. So we're kind of still in the process of figuring out what those are going to look like, what they're going to be, and testing the circuits. And you know, as we get along further here, we'll have release dates, but the line, it will be actively growing at, for very a while cool. Now
well, I can already tell that I would be signing on, you know, because I'm a fuzz addict, so if you come out with a Petty fuzz, you know, you can just pretty much sign me up. I'll be there.
Oh man.
Oh fuzz, yeah, addict, it's, huh? It's kind of gross. It's kind of gross. That's a good one. It's like, real, yeah. Why do I need this? Well, cause I do. Yes. Like early on when I in my pedal collecting days, I call my buddy. I'm like, I got this new fuzz. You gotta check it out. It's so sweet. And he's like, wait, hold on. How many fuzzes do you have right now? I'm like, I don't know. Let me count them up, you know, and this was, you know, pretty early on. I'm like, oh, it looks like I got nine. And he's like, and he's like, how many pedals do you have? I'm like, 12. And that was a couple of years ago. So you can imagine it's only gotten worse. Uh-oh. It is good, but you know, only I think it's good. Yeah.
A funny story on fuzz. One of the first, you know, 10, 15 Petty Drives we built, one of them, the iron side, decided it was a fuzz pedal and turned itself into a fuzz box. A very cool gated fuzz, actually. It's kind of a fuzz factory-esque, but with a gate, a very natural gate that was really cool. And I spent about 6 hours trying to figure out why it was doing that, because I want to take that and see if I can't reproduce it, you know, because I just love playing with it. And I still haven't figured it out. So I know. It's elusive. You know, these circuits are kind of crazy, but sometimes. And I've kind of succumbed to, I think I'm just going to box it up and it will be an anomaly. It deserves to be played.
I'm gonna have to. I'm gonna have to make the drive down there and investigate that.
Oh, and try that one out, right?
Man, you should see me. I'm grinning like a schoolboy right now. It's ridiculous. that's fantastic.
That's the kind of thing that you know. it's a time warp. You know, you plug one of those in, and all of a sudden an hour is gone, and you haven't got anything done, but you had a good time.
That's what it's all about. That's so awesome. So I've been asking this question. I know we're getting close here. I've asked this question the last couple episodes of everybody. So I figure I might as well keep that tradition alive. If you got the time, what would your dream rig be kind of going from guitar to amp. You don't have to get down to like, you don't have to guitar get to down amp. To like speaker cables or anything, but
sure. Oh man, well I have my own episodes of gas, mm-hmm. just like everyone else. You know, right now I'm kind of planning out a little bit of a new board for myself, based around a couple new pedals that have come out recently. Obviously a pre-drive, petty drive,
of course,
combo, which is just basically to get the, and I will mention that the petty drive was designed to interact with the pre-drive. And so actually you get the most out of the petty drive if you actually have a pre-drive hitting it in front, which is kind of interesting. So obviously it sounds great on its own, but that between the two of them, you get basically as many channels of gain as you could ever want. And so that's fun. So that kind of takes care of all of that. Obviously a volume pedal for me is a important piece. And then I haven't played it yet. So, you know, I'm stepping on a limb here, but almost purely due to how slick it would be a Boss DD500, because it has that same front face, you know, the angled front face as the Petty Johns, and then some sort of reverb pedal. I've even toyed with the idea of rehousing, say, a Hall of Fame or something in one of my boxes, and just having this slick angle,
all
across the front. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would just be just all front row, real basic, you know, the drive, volume pedal, delay, and reverb, and
that would look cool.
Yes, so that would just be real slick, kind of flyboard, so to speak. And then I think Summer Nam Boss really came out with a couple of really cool products to put them back in the game again. I've been wondering when they are going to do that, but I think their new looper there is pretty darn, looks pretty darn cool too, as far as the features and the functions. And so I've been thinking about setting up a big board based around that, being that on the front row as well, and keeping all my time-based stuff back there, you know, with the, it can sync through it with the tap and such, and kind of going with that same theme of the front row with the angle and the true bypass switch look. I just think that's pretty fun. And then as far as guitars and amp go, you know, I'm all over the place right now. I'm gassing a little bit for, I just recently stumbled upon the PRS Starla.
The Starla is great. I want
the
one
Starla.
Too. I really do.
I mean, it's just, I'm a huge fan of a guitar that can give me a lot of different tones out of one rig, so I don't have to change the guitars. So obviously that has the coil tap on the neck or on the bridge pickup, and kind of the Filtertron style, and I don't know. It's got the looks, it's got the Bigsby, it's got a PRS neck. You know, I'm just like,
they're beautiful.
Man.
I mean, they have kind of that less polished shape, but they got their own thing going on. They're gorgeous.
They got their own thing going on. You know, I particularly I found that they make it's not real popular, so I don't know if they're making it right now or not, but I saw one on eBay. I think it's called Ice Blue. Have you seen that finish on that guitar?
I have not.
It's like a sparkle, almost a Pelham blue type vibe.
Oh no, actually I take that back. Right, I did see that. Somebody had one on Instagram somewhere. Yeah. I gotta find that again. Yes.
Yeah. I actually posted a picture of one on Facebook a few weeks ago when I found it. I'm like, oh my God, that might be my new guitar. But you know, so you know, obviously that seems like a great guitar at a great price. I'm really intrigued by those pickups. I'm intrigued by the playability of their neck, but I'm actually not a huge like standard humbucker fan, although I have a few. But right now I'm kind of in a single coil P90, maybe even Filtertron type mode, where I like that a little bit more of a saturated, sparkly tone. You know, so I'm kind of going leaning that way. Obviously, you know, there's I like to have them all, man. I like the Tellys. I live up here in Bend, or close to Bend. I'm in Sisters, actually, and Rogue Guitar Shop is here in Bend. I usually just drive their
Yeah,
orders
go tell them
over,
hi for me.
and
Yeah.
and I end up TMGs over there now, you know. And so I played a few of theirs a couple weeks ago, and gosh, I had to say their Tele was one of the
Yeah.
new ones, you know, since there's things have changed
Oh,
hands over
yes.
there. And gosh, that was like an experience. I don't know if I've ever felt and heard a Tele like that one was. And I went, oh my gosh, that is something. And I, of course, I'm also a huge fan of I'm a huge fan of the Veritas, you know, Portlander semi-hollow. I think the Starla is kind of like my attempt of getting a guitar kind of like that, but for about a
Yeah,
third of the price.
that is one of the, that one I was looking at their stuff today. I'm going, "Oh, this is something I need to get my hands on somehow." Like the Veritas stuff was
Yeah,
blowing my mind. So
we did a Tools for Tone event with them last year with the pre-drive, and Casey brought out a few of his guitars, and they were just unreal. Playability and tone and just craftsmanship was just it was just like, man, that's that I've actually historically have been a vintage guitar guy. Pretty much all of my guitars I've ever bought are used and usually as old as I can afford, and
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I bought a Rickenbacker this year, and
But
that was the first brand new guitar I've ever bought, ever.
there you go. Yeah, and so, but with these days, with the whole boutique guitar world blowing up, I'm like, I need one of those. I need a Veritas. I need a doozy. I need a, you know, like one of each of these flavors. You know, and they're all just killer flavors, and I think all these builders do such good work. I can only hope I can maybe score a few trade points for some pedals towards a couple of these guitars,
Well,
you know,
I
one day.
like some. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Veritas because I just recorded an episode, last episode actually, with Chris Benson, from Benson Amps, and
Oh, cool.
he's like, "Have you
Yeah,
checked
yeah.
out Veritas guitars?" I'm like, "No," and then I did the next day and was like, "Where have I been? What am I doing with my life?"
Yeah, they're incredible.
Why? Yeah. So some of these builders right now, they're doing such a good job at, you know, making these new designs that aren't stupid. Like, you know what I mean?
There you
It's
go.
like you could
Yep.
make it some sort of ridiculous looking guitar, and yeah, and this has never been done before. It's like, well, there's a reason that's never been done before, because it's horrible. But
Right.
these some of these the stuff some of these guys are coming up with, Fano and others, it's like, man, that's beautiful.
Oh
Good
yeah.
job.
Oh yeah. I played a Fano over there at Rogue that had some P90s in it that made me gasp pretty hard after a Fano with P90s in it, because it was just like, oh, this is what a P90, you know, kind of offset Jazzmaster like guitar is supposed to be like, man. You know, so I think you know, I think I daydream about, you know, in my studio up there, because I tend to rationalize having lots of different flavors for the sake of the
That's
studio, you
totally
know,
legitimate. That is
but
completely legitimate.
there you go,
That's
right?
a
Right.
business write-off.
So
Come on, man.
that's right, that's right. But you know, so I daydream about, you know, which model from which maker I like, and I think I need at least six or seven, you know, of these guitars out there right now to, you know, kind of a complete, but you know, I feel like 30 years from now it will be a collection from this time
Yeah.
era, you know, and I think it's good chance a lot of these companies won't be around, and it would be kind of a special thing to have a
Yeah.
collection of these guitars from when they're being made, you
Well, I
know, and
almost feel like this is kind of a, I don't know, like there's been boutique guitar builders forever, but these last, like, I don't know, 4 years, it's like that's when people yep. really started cranking out the magic, in my opinion. Maybe I'm inaccurate. Maybe that's yep. just when I started paying attention. But I'm pretty impressed, I got to say.
I think things have gone to a new level. And honestly, you know, even Page on Electronics, I think, is part of it. And part of it is that people are willing. There's a group of people out there that are willing to pay for it. You know, you get into the studio world, and if you're serious, you don't blink an eye at spending $3K on a microphone or $2K in a microphone preamp or $5K on converters, you know, or that type of money for a simple piece of gear is just kind of what you do if you're a professional. But in the guitar world for so long, it's like, man, I can buy a $500 guitar and a $500 amp and a you know, $100 dirt box, and let's go gig. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And you can, but at the same time, I feel like there's this renaissance of tone and feel and craftsmanship that people are. It's not even so much people say, well, the people in the crowd probably can't even hear that. And I think some of the times. That's actually
I think
true.
A lot of the time it is, but I don't think it's necessarily for them.
that's where I go from there. I go, but the difference is if the person playing the guitar is feeling better, is feeling like what they're putting out is coming through and inspiring them, then they perform better and the entire experience goes up a notch. You know, if they're not worried about messing with some, their tone's not quite right, you know, so they're messing with the pedal. If they can just sit down and rip, be inspired and create musical moments and connect with the crowd, man, that's, and the gear's not getting in the way. It's just pushing that all forward. There's something special about that, you know? And I think a lot of these high end builders, that's what they're really building for. It's not necessarily even for the audience. It's so that when the musician sits down to play, that the gear responds and doesn't hold them back, but actually pushes them forward and gives back and just every step of the way. And I think that's so neat, you know. So, as far as amps go, oh man, I want to finish the question.
That was a brilliant little diatribe you just went on there. I couldn't have said that better than myself. That was fantastic.
Like that?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. No, that one. That's my little spiel, man. I tell that to people all the time. I'm like, it's you know, and I think that's something I found. You know, the whole feel, the interaction between the gear and the performer is something that even my pedals are all about. They're all about. In the studio, being able to get exactly the tone you want coming through the microphones without having to do a ton of tweaking, just quickly being able to get there and getting a sound that fits in the mix right away. That allows you to focus on performance and focus on getting your take right. And if it feels right, you can get there faster, but then you can take that out on the road with you. You know, it's not just stuck in the studio with you. You can actually go perform that out. I think that's really, really, you know, important. And so it's a big part of what I do. I think it's finding that inspiration and that feel of everything. When it really comes down to it, it is about the music, and trying to reconnect with music these days is really important. And
that's all right
again, but I think it's an
it
important
is, it's
part.
Very important. You can't talk think, about it enough, so that's great.
Yeah, and I think we're always in this pendulum balance of fun and seriousness with this industry, right? It's all a ton of fun, but it's also really serious. You know, connecting emotionally with music with people can be really serious, can be really fun. You know, and I try to keep those both, try to, you know, balance those as much as I can as I'm moving forward. But I think I do, as far as amps go, I'm in the same boat with like the boutique builders of amps. Right now, I think Jackson Amp Works has some of the best stuff I've ever heard. I think in the styles that I like, you know, they're Newcastle and Fullerton. They've got a few models that just are just mind-blowing to me how good they sound. I think there's three or four other companies making just killer designs. You know, you got your Bad Cats and your Morgans and all these, you know, Tyler's another one that makes them. Even Benson up there is doing some great work, you know. And I haven't really dug into it yet to find which exact ones I would want, mainly because I'm still working on my pedal board and my guitar, you know, setup. I feel like after I kind of got that a little more solidified, I'm gonna go. I'll go amp hunting when I can afford to, you know. Until then, I'm playing right now. I'm playing. I got a little amp that's done me really well. I got a 65 amps 112 cab with a Celestion G12 gold in the back. You know, they're a great cab. That's a great 112 cab. I got that with the idea of using these, you know, smaller wattage kind of lunchbox tube amp heads, and just wanted to get a whole collection of them for the studio. Basically, have a little rack of lunchbox heads because they're not that expensive. And just wanted to get a really good cab that I could use any of them with, you know, whether it's, you know, like a little transatlantic or at the time, a lot of the boutique companies weren't really making them yet, but now they are. So now, you know, Jackson or a Morgan or any of these smaller guys making these smaller heads under 30 watts, I just use them with my cab. But right now, I only have one, and I'm just using it's a little
Oh
Vox
man,
night
that is
train
a
that I've
great little
modded.
amp, isn't it?
I've modded a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love it. And what I did a really simple mod that really was a game changer for the amp for me. For one, I bought the cab. I actually bought it new from PGS, which I very rarely do, but it was when they still had their showroom downtown Portland there. I went up with my guitars and my pedal board and sat in the amp room and tried out combos of, you know, different combos versus heads and cabs, and just played my gear through every possible combination I could find that was remotely in my price
Yeah.
range.
Hey, I've done that same
And
exact thing, and the night train is the one I wanted too.
you know, I ended up on this night train with a nice cab, and it sounded, you know, I put it side by side with the hand-wired AC15. And I liked the night train a little bit more with the 65 amps cab. And I was like, you know, this is, and it was $400 less. So I went with that. And then I did a little mod. I thought, you know, this is going to get me by for a while, but definitely still thinking about getting other heads. And I has this curious switch called a thick
Yes,
and
yes.
bright mode. I don't know if you recall that, but basically, if you throw it into thick mode, it bypasses the EQ and you get a lot more gain and kind of sounds like a kind of distortion channel or something. But it's a lot warmer. And I went, man, if this thing could clean up, you know, because I feel like the EQ is a little brittle and a little thin. And so I dropped a low gain tube in the front end of that, and voila, the thick mode is plenty of clean headroom. And I can get full swing out of that at any gig. I can get full swing out of the power amp and the preamp and bypass my EQ
Wait
completely. So all
a
my
second.
tone
What's your
is
name
right out
again?
of my pedals.
Oh yeah, okay.
Stephen
Well, that's who I
Pettyjohn.
thought I was talking to, 'cause my friend did the exact same thing with his night drain.
It's great.
Like
Oh,
I
man.
went up there to buy the I went up there and did the same thing that you did. Shot it out all the gear, and I was like, okay, when I have the scratch, I'm gonna be buying the night train. And then, you know, he's in my band, right? So then his birthday came along before mine, and his parents and his family went in together. He didn't have any idea they were getting it for him, but he had mentioned he wanted that amp, and
Oh,
they bought it for
nice.
him. And I'm like, well, I can't have the same amp as you. I gotta get something else. But he did the same
Right.
exact thing. He popped a lower gain tube in, and exactly, that thing sounds great. He built his own cab, and it has
Yeah.
a greenback in it. Yeah,
A
and
greenback,
yeah,
yep.
that's a ripper of an amp for the price.
Man, it really is, especially I it's got me really thinking about amps a little bit in a different way, to be honest. This whole idea of no EQ, just preamp gain and power amp gain. is just, it's so great, especially with the pedal-based drive system. It's just, you know, get the full range, push both all your tubes as hard as they right to the sweet spot, and do all your tone shaping with your pedals and your hands, you know, and your guitar. And it's been just the my favorite thing ever. In fact, I hardly gas after amps, even with my little night train, you know, because it gets the job done extremely credibly.
I can understand that. I mean, I've always been a fan of that ever since they came out, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's surprising. It's very surprising. Maybe not the most, you know, boutique of anything, but it's definitely been an enjoyable amp for me, and consequently, what I've ended up using for designing most of my
Well,
pedals.
there you go. Perfect.
So.
So, man, we could just keep going. I know we could. This is how every episode's gone, where I have to go. I say this at the end
Good.
of every episode. Man, we could just go all night, but I know that you got some things going on, and yeah, it's drawn to a co close, or we literally will be talking about gear all night. So, thank you very
Totally.
much for coming on. Always
You
welcome to
bet.
do it again. It was very enjoyable talking to you. If you had any closing thoughts before we sign off here.
You know, not particularly. Just thanks for having me on. And I know we're Paige on still kind of new kids on the block, but we are we aim to be just super approachable. So if any guys have any questions on our products, please feel free to reach out to me. You know, we want to be awesome in service and be excellent in the products that we produce. So we're really wanting to keep the bar of boutique pedals going up and be a part of this movement of just creating new gear for the music of the future, you know, to push the envelope. And we're just really honored and blessed to be a part of this time. It's really exciting.
That's awesome. Thank you very much again for coming on. It was awesome talking to you. Same boat here, being new
Totally.
kids on the block. I'm trying to talk to anybody that has something I'm interested in talking about gear wise, and so everybody's been really cool so far. And yeah, thank you
Awesome.
again. And
You
so
bet.
yeah.
Thank you.
For Stephen Pettyjohn, my name is Blake Weiland, and as always, good luck and good tones. One last thing before we totally sign off here, I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company. And I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously, seriously, seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things. And by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch. And I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got three different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier.
So go to gunstreetwiringshop.com and check them out.